think it's beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob in your life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyar, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Welcome to another edition of Real Science Friday. My co-host is here.
My name is Fred Williams, and I'm a creation speaker and software engineer.
Fred, and tonight you're also involved with Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, and tonight you guys have a fabulous meeting planned. It's a sneak preview to a major motion picture.
That's right, and coincidentally, it's from Creation Ministries International. We're going to be talking about their magazine today, but they've got a movie that they've produced. It is a big-budget documentary called The Voyage That Shook the World. And again, it's an exclusive viewing, and we encourage you to come out to our meeting. It's at Holly Hills Church. And to find out how to get there, just go to youngearth.org, and it'll provide all the information you need to get there.
Youngearth.org, and the time?
Time is 7 o'clock, and it's Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship is the name of our organization.
7 o'clock tonight? Boy, is that going to be great.
Oh, it is, and I've heard really good comments about this movie. I can't wait to see it.
And it's about 55 minutes long.
And there'll be a discussion afterwards,
yeah,
and it's just going to be really exciting.
It'll be great. So, Creation Magazine, put out by Creation Ministries International in Australia. They just do such a great job. There are so many fabulous creation ministries, Fred. Young Earth, God Created in the Recent Past, Specially Made Man, the whole universe. And this is one of the great ministries. I'm fond of Dr. Walt Brown, his book In the Beginning. This is another ministry out of Australia, Creation Ministries International. They're fabulous.
And I don't know how long they've been putting out this magazine, but in my opinion, it's the best magazine put out by any creation organization. A lot of people, I think, believe the same thing. It's very well done, very well illustrated.
Yeah.
And it's written for the layman, so I can understand it.
And it's filled with science. Every issue is packed.
Absolutely.
And so why don't we start about the Earth, the world, where it is. Now, the evolutionist, the atheist, Stephen Hawking, the Big Bang, they all say the Earth is not in a special place in the universe. And there's a growing mountain of evidence that that's not true.
That's right. I mean, not only is there a ton of evidence that life can exist only on this planet, that the fact that life can exist here is remarkable. I mean, all these tight tolerances of these fundamental nuclear properties. Mm-hmm. You've got things like we're the precise distance from the sun. Our distance from the moon.
The makeup of our atmosphere.
Jupiter stabilizing our tilt. I mean, a lot of people don't take these things into consideration.
And Jupiter protecting us from comets.
Absolutely.
So many factors, thousands, but there are dozens of major factors making it possible for life to flourish on Earth.
That's right. And one of the things mentioned in this article is something that cosmologist Dr. Russell Humphreys has done some research on, and he's a creation scientist, but he's a very renowned scientist. He worked for Sandia Labs for many years, very respected in his field.
Sandia National Laboratories.
That's right.
U.S. government scientist.
That's right. He has a PhD from LSU, Louisiana State. Anyways, he has this, he was actually expounding on what an evolutionist had already discovered. We've got redshifts that we can look at from galaxies, right?
Redshifts. We just lost 82% of the audience. Redshifts. Okay. What does that mean?
Well, it's like the Doppler effect with sound. And we can tell how far something
when
is.
When a train whistle is coming or a police car siren.
Very good. Yeah. So we can kind of tell how far away something is, right? There's a sound effect.
The sound waves.
That's kind of what like redshift is like. We can tell how far something is away from us.
And if it's coming toward us, a train, the pitch of the train whistle, it goes up.
That's right. It goes up. And then as it gets farther away, it goes down. Well, that's a similar concept to these redshifts, wavelengths.
So the same thing happens with light as happens with sound waves.
That's right.
Okay.
And so what Humphreys elaborated on, and again, this is stuff that evolutionists have discovered, is that we're finding as you look out from our galaxy, other galaxies are lining up on concentric circles from Earth, from our galaxy. As you go farther out, there's a big gap of space, and then you go farther out, and there's more
galaxies
lining up on a concentric circle, kind of like looking at a dartboard in all the concentric circles. And imagine those are galaxies lining up on those.
And also like an atom, maybe very roughly speaking as an analogy, where you have the neutrons in the center and you have electrons and they occur at different energy spheres.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
And they jump. It's not a gradual energy, they're jumps. And we're finding that's true of galaxies in the universe.
So the fact that we observe this from Earth, what does that tell us? I mean, that really, that's powerful evidence that we are the center of the universe. There's no way that can be true if we're part of this evolutionary Big Bang model where we're on the surface of a balloon and we can't tell that we're at the center of something. That's part of the Big Bang. That's one of their biggest tenets,
right,
is that you can't tell that we're at the Big Bang, that there is no center. But yet, hey, we can tell that we're at the center of the universe.
Well, it turns out that there is another study, another cosmologist, in fact, a team of cosmologists from University of Cape Town in South Africa. There are four cosmologists there, and another from Paris, from the Institute of Astrophysics, and they are testing their data where they've been looking at supernova. They're looking at supernova, and that's these super bright, distant starburst, and they said when you chart them three-dimensionally, you find out that they do not agree with the predictions of the Big Bang. The distribution of the supernova show that there is something wrong with the belief that the Earth is not in a special place. And then there's a quote by this guy, this George Ellis, who's a leading cosmologist from South Africa. Fred, George Ellis said, "We live in an improbable universe. You could shift around the improbability, but you can't remove the improbability." So if the universe is a result of an explosion, then you would have mathematical equations that would tell you the probability of where these things would be. And they'd be scattered randomly. And it turns out we're going to find an increasing amount of evidence that that's not true, that God, with care, put the Earth in a very privileged place.
Yeah, it defies explanation to say that this happened naturalistically. God is always thwarting a naturalistic explanation. Here again, we have something that the evolutionists, they love to use the word improbable. They have to use that a lot. And, you know, I would recommend to the listener, if you can remember this website, go to cosmologystatement.org, because this is a long list of secular scientists who are signing a petition saying we got to dump the Big Bang because there's tons of evidence against it. And these are not creationists who are signing this document.
Tons of evidence against the Big
Bang.
It's an untenable theory. And we covered that in our debate with the Old Earth Hugh Ross Denver chapter a few years ago. Fred, you were there.
Oh, yeah. It was great. They couldn't answer some of that. And I was surprised because some of them, you know, CU professors, at least from what I remember, one of them was. I don't want to misstate who was there, but they had some expert scientists.
The other
scientists
was a geophysicist, the head of Geophysical Society, and the other was a professor of math at CU in Boulder.
Yeah, and they couldn't explain. I remember they couldn't explain the spiral arms on a galaxy.
Right.
And what's the problem with spiral arms?
Well, it's been known for decades now, looking at the redshift of these stars, that the core of the galaxies and the arms are moving at different rates, and if they were only millions of years old, the spiral form of those galaxies, they would be deformed by now.
Yeah, it'd be like winding up a clock screw. Over time, those arms should become featureless because the outside of the arms are revolving faster than the center, and so over time, it should be a featureless
disk.
Just
a blob.
But no matter how far out you look, they all look the same, as if they were just planted
there. They all look the same. And remember the Hubble Deep Field image? I was on TV back then. In fact, we're on TV now, Fred, on the weekends, Channel 53.
Oh, I heard that. That's good news.
Back on the air in Colorado. Every weekend, midnight to 1, our old time slot, on Channel 53, KWHD in the Denver metro area, on cable, on broadcast, high definition. It's really fun to be back on TV for the next year, Lord willing. So Bob and You're Live on TV, Channel 53. But I was on TV in 80 cities back then. The Hubble Deep Field image was coming out, and I made a prediction against all of NASA. What do I know? I'm a pastor. I'm a Bible church pastor, Denver, but what do I know? I said, when they developed that deep field image, they said we're going to see galaxies just forming. I said, no, we're not. We're going to see galaxies just like the ones next door, just like the Andromeda, just like all the galaxies around us. That's what they'll see across the universe, and that's what they saw.
And that's what science is supposed to do. It's supposed to make a prediction and be confirmed by an independent source. And, Bob, that was very good science.
See that? And NASA disagreed, but who was right? They were not right. They don't now have pictures of galaxies just forming, spiral galaxies just winding up. They just got pictures of more galaxies, which show the glory of God.
And when you use this evidence in that debate, what was surprising to me is they didn't have an answer. Not that evolutionists have answers, but usually they have a story to tell,
right,
or they've got some distractions. They were dumbfounded. They just they didn't answer it, and they went to the next part of the debate.
Yeah.
They didn't even address it.
Speaking of a story to tell, didn't Charles Darwin, since we're celebrating his 150th year since Origin of the Species, didn't he say that peacocks evolved their, you know, the males have these gorgeous
beautiful feathers,
tails, feathers. Didn't he say that they evolved those because it was sexual reproduction pressure, where the females were attracted to these, you know, the longer, the more complex, the more colorful, the females would be attracted to the males, and that's why they evolved their tails. Now, as a creationist, I would think they have those gorgeous tails because God thought it looked cool.
Absolutely.
God thought it looked cool, and he put them
and
on
it
Earth.
It does look cool.
For him to enjoy and for human
for
beings
to
enjoy. That's why they're there. So, but
he,
what happened?
He made his wonderful things to be remembered. That's a psalm, and I don't remember the number. I apologize for that.
No, that's all right. Yeah, God's hand is on the creation, and we see the glory of God. So, turns out they did a study on this, didn't they?
They did, and it's funny because to this day, I'll debate evolutionists, and they'll bring up how this natural selection with the peacock that you just talked about. But they did this study, and
Charles Darwin came up with that in 1871.
He did, and his followers still today love to tout that as evidence.
His theory of sexual selection, that's why these things evolved in peacocks and other, you know, other species.
Yeah, so this article talks about how they did research on these peacocks for 7 years.
7 years they watched the reproduction of peacocks?
That's a long time watching
to watch peacocks, that's a long time.
And they observed, in that time, they observed 268 matings.
Wow, this was in Japan, right?
So, yeah, this was done in Japan, University of Tokyo, and the researchers had to conclude that, to quote, "The peacock's train is not the object of female sexual preference, contradicting Darwin's theory of sexual selection." Boy, how often do we hear this contradicting Darwin's theory? We hear that all the time.
Over and over and over. And it's on the big issues that supposedly were so obvious, like the finches in the Galapagos Islands, completely opposite of what Darwin thought, that their long beaks and the short, narrow, stubby beaks, that they evolved over tiny mutations over hundreds of generations. It's not true. It's pre-coded changes based on the climate, and those beaks change back and forth within one or two generations based on what kind of insects are on the island.
Yeah, that small-scale change has nothing to do with evolution.
And it's pre-programmed.
Absolutely.
It's pre-programmed.
It can't happen. Yeah, that's right. It can't happen by random change in a mutation with selection. It has to be something, like you said, pre-programmed. There's no way it could be what's called neo-Darwinism.
And so based on the amount of humidity in the Galapagos Islands, if there's a lot of humidity and then a lot of bugs, then the birds can be more efficient and they can have shorter beaks. But if there's a little bit of humidity and fewer bugs, the birds need to be able to get at the bugs in their hiding places, and they grow longer, narrower beaks. And that goes back and forth. It's like fish in a lake with predators. Genetic switches go back and forth to adapt, not by tiny mutations over 100 generations, but instantly to adapt to changing environments. That's all pre-programmed design.
That's right. And it goes against Darwinism because it's non-random. You know, speaking of birds, Bob, there's an article in here I really liked. I want to jump to this real quick, and it's about crows. And how the title of the article is "Crows Make Monkeys Out of Chimps."
That's another good article.
Oh man! It talks about how crows seem to be able to use casual reasoning to solve a problem, something that has not been documented in chimps. And they gave an example. They have this thing called a trap table problem, and so when it's presented to a crow, they have to retrieve food from a setup where failure meant losing the food down a trap hole into a wooden table.
So if they don't get the food right away, the food goes down this trap door and they lose it. So they have to figure out how to get the food without losing it.
Yeah, and so they succeeded even when the equipment was modified. And they've done the same test with apes, and they fail this test over and over
again. Wait a minute. Apes are our closest cousins.
They're dummies.
Wait. Apes are our closest cousins. The human brain, the human cranium, the larger brain size, that all evolved greater reasoning abilities. Apes should be the closest to us. Now, this was done at the University of Auckland in New Zealand. Down there, they did this study, and they found out that the birds had a better use of simple reasoning skills than did apes, chimps, monkeys.
So when you say someone has a bird brain, you better be careful because they're not so dumb after all.
Yeah, that's right. So if chimpanzees are our close evolutionary cousins, then how is it that birds, which are not supposed to be our evolutionary cousins and which have much smaller brains, can surpass chimps in various measures of intelligence? Fred, it cracks me up. The evolutionists say that because you have a bigger brain, you're more intelligent. Well, that just doesn't cut it. That's so trivial. It's so embarrassing. It's like a comic strip understanding of the world. Like Oriental females who study in our universities versus the defensive line of the football team. Which has larger cranium size, larger brains? The Oriental females have much smaller brains. And they just surpass the jocks on the football team in physics and everything else practically.
Oh, it's, you know, the evolution's come up with so many silly ideas. This reminds me of a debate I had where they said that if you, a monkey, if you put him into public schools, a chimpanzee up through third grade, he'd be as intelligent as a third grade human. And I said, that's really silly. However, there was a grain of truth to that because he was talking about public schools.
Yeah, right. Oh, boy. Those public school teachers, now, we'll never let up on them because they deserve it. So, Fred, yeah, it turns out, and this came from New Scientist, a major source of evolutionary preaching, and it turns out that every way you look at the predictions of evolution, they fail. There's an article right next to this one. This might be my favorite article in the whole publication. It's about blue butterflies.
Oh, yeah, the monarch butterfly. And these things are really neat because they got an iridescent color to them. If you think of the blue morph butterfly, it has that iridescent color on its wings where you can look at it at a different angle and you see different shades of blue. It's really neat. And what this is due to is property of light. And so let me explain this. When you see that blue, Bob, on these butterflies, if you can imagine seeing this beautiful butterfly, you're not actually looking at pigment blue. In other words, you know, like our shirt might be have a pigment blue or pigment red.
Yes, a blue dye from maybe blueberries, and they crush them, and they get a blue dye, and they put it in a cloth, and they might dye a cloth. So that's pigment, right?
Yeah, that's right. So, and I don't recommend doing this, but what if you were to wad up this butterfly?
Squeeze it in your fingers.
And the feathers.
And this one
is... the wings.
Yeah, it's called the blue morpho.
Yeah.
Morpho menelaus of South America. And there's another one like it from Australia. And they're brilliantly blue, iridescent blue.
If you crushed
it in your fingers, what would happen to your fingers?
Well, they'd get kind of a dark color. I don't know. The point is
would
the
it
color...
Would blue? Would your fingers get blue?
Your fingers would not get blue. Your fingers... Basically, it's kind of a grayish color. There's no pigment color. So we're not really seeing a color of blue in the sense of pigment. What we're seeing is almost perfect light interference. It's called constructive interference.
Wow.
And if you look at these wings...
These are the most brilliant blue butterflies on the planet.
That's right.
It is startling. It's like neon blue in a neon sign. And a neon sign is not pigment, is it?
No.
It's gas that's... excited by electrical charge, and the atoms emit a light wave. And depending on what we put in there, red or orange, yellow, blue, green, that's the kind of blue we're seeing, neon blue.
An iridescent blue.
Yeah.
It's remarkable.
And so let's explain to the audience how you gave a technical term for it. Another way of saying it is this butterfly is made with photonic structures.
Photonic structures.
Photonic structures. And so when the light hits the butterfly, something astounding happens. The butterfly has ridges. It has scales with ridges in the scales.
And I've seen pictures of this. It's not shown in this article, but they look like Christmas trees attached to each other. So imagine Christmas tree-shaped valleys, like a Grand Canyon, but make it a Christmas tree. You know, like how you have those things you punch into food, you know, make a shape?
Right.
That's what it looks like, is these little Christmas trees attached to each other.
Only millions of them,
all attached to each other in these canyons. And what happens is these light waves go in there, and they bounce off and hit another light wave.
And the light waves, they get modified.
They do. It's an interference effect, and that's what allows us to see this blue. Everything else gets canceled out but the blue.
So the only thing that could reflect off the wing of the butterfly is this brilliant blue color. It's astounding. And to give you an idea of the grooves, you said talking about these
Christmas tree, that's a good way to put it, the grooves.
One way to picture how small these grooves are is think of a half of a millionth of a meter. Fred, you take a meter, about a yard, 3 feet about, and you divide it into a million chunks. And then if you take a half of one of those millionths, that's the width of one of the grooves. But it turns out this butterfly has two different sets of grooves. The other is a fifth of a millionth of a meter. A fifth of a millionth of a meter.
So two layers of these grooves. Amazing.
Two layers at a crisscross pattern. The one is 200 nanometers in width. 200 billionths of a meter in width. It's startling.
And it causes an effect called dual diffraction. I mean, single diffraction is hard enough for evolutionists to explain. Now they got to double their problem with explaining the dual diffraction.
Yeah. I mean, the idea, now we can take this. Researchers have figured out that we could take this technology, this concept of dual, these micro grooves, and we could use them to increase the functionality of our spectrometers. Our advanced technology can now be developed to work even better because of what we've seen that God did 6,000 years ago.
That's right. And, you know, there's also some studies, the military has looked at this for camouflage. So maybe we could have, what's that thing called, the Romulan spaceship, how it goes? Cloaking device.
A cloaking device.
We could have a cloaking B-1 stealth, you know, it could be really stealth bomber.
Cool.
But they really, seriously, scientists that work for the military have studied these butterflies for camouflage effects.
Yeah, and we have here, Fred, if you think about it, the vast majority of butterflies, almost all butterflies, they don't use photonic structures. They have pigments in their wings. There are these small number of butterflies that look beautiful like every other butterfly, only they use a completely different technology in what it evolved in these different species of butterfly and such a sophisticated architectural design, and it has to be implemented in this DNA code, in this language. And the language, it's a symbolic description of these photonic structures. In physics, there are no symbolic logic functions. There are none. There are no symbolic logic functions. So how is nature, physics, chemistry, electrical forces, how are they going to create a symbolic description of how to build photonic structures with this kind of rigid tolerance, 200 nanometer wide grooves, crisscrossed with half a millionth of a meter grooves?
The atheistic idea is so nonsensical, I can't put it into words. That's Lord Kelvin.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Lord Kelvin, who's the one who gave us what? Well, we named the units Kelvin, temperature, after him. And he also, didn't he give us thermodynamics?
That's right.
Lord Kelvin gave us thermodynamics. So, yeah, brilliant guy, and the atheist left him speechless.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, so Fred, we looked at the peacock, and we looked at the planet's place in the universe, and we looked at the bird brains.
There's other animals in here.
Butterflies. There's other animals.
There's a cow.
The article on cows. It's just hysterical, Fred. Compare all this to this pathetic Discover magazine issue that is just it's a poor excuse for a science magazine. And here we have the Christians doing the greatest science and the greatest educational service.
Yeah, and this was really interesting to me. I wasn't aware of this, but, you know, apparently they did a study on these cows, and it looked like they were looking at what? Domesticated
thousands of cows. On pastures, and they use Google Earth to do this.
That's right. Okay.
Over 8,500 images of domestic cattle in pastures and plains all over the world, thanks to Google.
And so what this article is saying is that with this study, they observed that the cattle, whether or not they were grazing or resting, they tend to align their bodies in a north-south direction in line with the Earth's magnetic field.
Cows?
Yeah.
Cows? What does a cow know? Cows stand in line with the north-south poles of the Earth. And in fact, there was another study in the Czech Republic, and researchers, and by the way, this stuff comes from the BBC and from the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. These are all evolutionary sources. And in the Czech Republic, researchers recorded the body positions of wild deer across their country, 3,000 deer, and they found out that the majority of deer faced northward, and another third faced southward. That's 80%.
That's amazing.
And what they did with the Google study of 8,500 images of cattle around the world on pastures, they ruled out any relationship with the position of the sun or with the wind. So they said there's something in cows and deer that caused them to line up north-south, and they're bewildered.
That doesn't sound random to me, does it? To you, Bob, it sounds like maybe the word design may be popping up here again.
It doesn't sound random. A famous evolutionist, J.B.S. Haldane, said just a half a century ago that evolution can never produce mechanisms like the wheel or a magnet because they would be virtually useless until they were fairly perfect. And here we have molecular biology. There's the most incredible wheels in these molecular machines. You know,
like the E. coli bacteria. I wonder what he'd think if he saw the video of that with the rotor and the stator and all these parts on this irreducibly complex structure.
Yeah, here's the ATP another synthase rotary motor, the flagellum. And here we have magnets, and scientists are thinking at Virginia Tech University, Professor John Phillips said, you know, there might be magnetic sensation and calculation in most of the animal kingdom. And he said, we need to think about some really fundamental things. Why do these animals have this magnetic ability? And Fred, I think I know why. Because God created with an eye toward beauty. And when you look at a pasture and the cows are all lined up, it's way more pretty.
Cool.
You see their spots. It's cool.
And I never thought of it like that. But that's, you know, it occurred to me, Bob, we're always at a 45-degree angle doing this radio show. I wonder if all the other radio co-host guys across country.
Yeah. In every studio, they're lined up north-south. So
that is amazing.
It's
amazing.
But
that's the kind of stuff you get out of this magazine. It's really cool. Highly recommended.
Right. And so Creation Magazine, they recommend that the evolutionist, that they do some really fundamental thinking to realize that these things happen because God is the creator.
That's right.
It's just great. Tonight is the showing, sneak preview of the Darwin film.
That's right. The Voyage That Shook the World. And I hear it's fantastic. Holly Hills Bible Church.
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. Roughly I-25 in Evans. Go to youngearth.org and you get all the information on how to get there.
And Maranatha Christian Center, with a wonderful school in Arvada. And our website is kgov.com, 800-8-NYAR. Give us a call, 836-9278.